Hello, I am Russell Fawcett, and today I am here with Justin Critchfield. I'm the owner of Omada Real Estate, and Justin is actually our first independent broker that chose to partner with us. So Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much.
Okay, we're going to jump right into it. So before we go into Omada and anything of like why you joined, I want to know a little bit more about you. So I'm going to keep it super vague, and Who is Justin?
Oh my goodness. Well, they call me Justin the Real Deal Critchfield. Has been my real estate nickname for 20 years now. So I got into the business when I was 21, and this is kind of all I've ever known, back in 2005. So I've been there through the good times of the mid-2000s, the complete terrible crazy times with the financial crisis and the housing crash of 2008 through 11, and then rebuilt my business again and was able to grow a team, grow a brokerage. You know, when our best year, we did over 175 transactions as a team. I have a flipping business with my wife that she does. And at one point, we were flipping homes and growing real estate. And so, just love helping people, love helping the consumer. You know, real estate's one of the biggest transactions that someone can do. And so to be able to know that you're a really good person that has an expert in this area is fun, to know that you're giving people the best service possible, the best advice on one of the biggest decisions that they could ever make.
Okay. So why, like as a 21-year-old going back, why did you choose real estate over maybe some of the other, maybe you weren't considering anything else, but like why real estate?
Yeah, it was one of those things that kind of fell in my lap. I had two older brothers that were in the business. And so, you know, seeing them and seeing what they're doing and recognizing that this is a skill set that I had. You know, we all kind of got it from our father, who invested in rentals and real estate. I'm the youngest of eight kids. And so when I was growing up, my dad had basically retired by the time I was born and could have memories. And so it was funny because, you know, his days really consisted of, you know, just kind of checking on the rentals and getting those rent checks. So as a kid, you know, when a tenant would move out, my parents would put us in our paint clothes and we'd go over there and we'd patch the walls, we'd paint the walls, and we'd help get the rentals ready. And I got to see my dad really, truly live a pretty awesome life of luxury in terms of his rentals would just come in, and he was very frugal. He would take them, he would pay them down, right? And then once he had enough money, he'd go buy the next one. And then he'd be frugal, pay that one down. And once he had the next money, he'd go buy the next one. And so as I got older, that was always kind of like one of the things that was mirrored to me was, you know, real estate is a fantastic way to live a residual income life where you don't have to worry a ton about that money. So, you know, I like to joke with people, as I got older and my dad got older, you know, I'd say, hey, Dad, can you come help me with this? And he'd be like, well, I don't know, son, I've got a pretty busy day. He goes, I've got some people that are going to drop off some rent checks. And then I've got to go to the bank and I've got to deposit those rent checks. And so he's like, I don't know, I'm pretty busy today. And I'd laugh and joke with him and give him a hard time about, yeah, Dad, you're real busy depositing those checks. So I think my brother saw that, you know, my older brother got into development and real estate. And so it's just kind of something that's always come naturally to us and to me.
So was that something that your dad like took down and sat you guys down and taught you the lessons? Was it just by watching him? I mean, him being successful of living that like passive income lifestyle, right? Like, and you guys have kind of followed in his footsteps of real estate. I know your brothers, you know, you have some that have been successful. Was that taught or was it more learned from you guys watching?
You know, he was a great teacher, and a lot of the times you don't want to hear his lectures or his teachings. And then because you have eight kids, he forgot who he told what to. So like you're telling it to the same kid like four times and you're like, Dad, I've heard this lesson. I don't need to hear it again. But you know, some of the main things he truly taught was number one, to just be frugal, right? He had enough money to do lots of things, but he just really stayed frugal with it. And you know, my mom at the time, it was hard, you know. My dad passed away 2 years ago, and just before he passed away, my mom got central AC in her home.
Wow.
For the first time. It was so funny because that, you know, would have cost him $7,000-$8,000, I'm sure, at the time. And he had the money in the bank, but he just didn't want to do it. And it's interesting because now the residual income that my mom has, she's actually so grateful, right? Because she doesn't have to work. And she sees some of her friends that are now older that are having to work, that are having a hard time with that. And so he definitely would kind of, as we're going to the rental properties, as he's driving us there and as we're talking, like he would definitely give those lessons about, hey, real estate is such an amazing investment. It's one of those things that, you know, just seems to always be going up, up, up. And even in the down markets, they don't last very long. And so, yeah, he loved to kind of teach. And to be honest, he was a very, very wise man that, you know, glad to listen to a lot of his advice.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the, like, I guess, tipping points of I want to invest in real estate is when I was doing research, I actually looked, and over the last 20 years, there were two times that rent spiked. Once, when the market was crashing back 2008, 2009, and then it spiked again during COVID. So it was like during a crash and during a run, rent prices increased. And so I was like, holy cow, like that is like people have to have somewhere to live. And when it's going up, I mean, investors typically have to charge more for rent to stay up with it. But then also when it crashed, people were having to get rid of their homes and move into rental. So there was more demand for rent. And so I was like, that's a pretty safe. I mean, yes, rents can still soften sometimes, you know, depending on the economy, but for the most part, it's going up. Yeah. Right?
You know, one of the things about inflation is he would always talk about inflation. And I think all of us didn't really understand, right? Like maybe you did as a business person, but like, I didn't truly understand inflation until we went through the COVID inflation that happened. And now we get it. When people say real estate is a hedge against inflation, it's that, right?
Yeah.
It is exactly what you're talking about. And now we all get it because we're like, yeah, we know what prices at the grocery store are doing.
Right.
We know what, you know, everything costs now. And it's like, dang, that would be awesome to have investment that's helping minimize what that inflation is doing.
Okay. So as a real estate agent, you mentioned that you've been in the business about 20 years. There's not a lot of people that hit a 20-year mark in real estate, right? And a lot of them honestly don't hit a 2-year mark. So what did you do or what was your lifestyle like? What was it like in the beginning? So going back to 2005 for you to be able to actually make a career out of real estate.
Yeah. So getting in as a 21-year-old, you know, it was fun. It was exciting. Making calls, following up with people. And, you know, my first year, I think I made like $35,000, $40,000 in the business. But as a single person, you know, 21 years old, that was like
livable wage.
Yeah, still like a decent amount of money for
yeah.
me. Like I still probably had money in the bank. And then year two to go on and make, you know, like 50, 60,000. I was rich. Like I was rich, man. I was saving up for an Audi and I had the money in the bank for it. I was able to buy my first house at 22 years old with that money and make my first investment. And yeah, life was going good. Life was going great. And even in 2007, you know, I actually remember the month. It was July 2007. And me and my brothers were kind of sitting around in the office and we're like, it feels slow. You know, the phone stops ringing. And we were like, this is so weird. And we didn't really know. And we had heard of like California crashing, but whatever, all the information that we were hearing was that Utah was a strong economy. Overinflated prices like California were the ones that were crashing, but not necessarily Utah. And so when stuff started to kind of go down, it was really surprising. And I didn't really feel it till my business until halfway through 2008 and 2009. And that's when stuff kind of started to get scary.
Yeah.
I got married, was on my cruise with my wife on a honeymoon. And I remember I had probably like $6,000 in the bank and my dad emails me and I get the email on the cruise and he says, hey, your taxes just got back. He's like, you owe $7,000.
You're like, couldn't you have waited a week?
Right? I'm like, why did I check my email? And that was kind of the part that I realized like, okay, I'm married now and I have got to start figuring out ways to do more business than what I was used to at the time. And that's when I started to get serious about stuff.
Okay. So what did get serious mean?
I have always loved being an innovator in real estate. I saw early on agents taking listings. I'm going to be honest, like I felt like they were losers. I felt like they were not great negotiators. I felt like, I'm like, how is this guy over here making $100,000 a year? Like people are listing their home with him. People are trusting him to buy their home. Like, holy smokes, I am so much better than that. And so when I got that email contemplating on the cruise, I knew that internet marketing was the route that I wanted to go. And not just like to generate leads, it was actually born out of, I want to be able to market my seller's listings better. I want to learn that marketing side so that I can show up at a listing presentation and say, hey, I know how to do Google marketing and we're going to expose your home to more sellers, or excuse me, to more buyers. And so that's when I started getting my first books on Google marketing, pay-per-click, SEO, all that stuff, learning that way. And so I did that for a couple of years, started experimenting, started testing stuff out. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I'm going to brag about this because I'm actually really proud of it. I started doing video and video tours on homes all the way back in 2009.
So before COVID.
Before everybody and their dog was doing real estate videos. We were out there filming HUD homes and I would go do the real estate deal of the day or the real estate deal of the week. And I would go film HUD homes with my little flip camera.
Yeah.
My little flip camera, and I would go take people through, and I'd be like, we're going to go see this home. It's priced at only $130,000. You get this 4-bed, 3-bath West Jordan home for 2,000 square feet, and it's only $130,000. And yes, it needs carpet, and yes, it needs paint. And I would run through those homes, and I would post them on YouTube. And that was kind of my first steps of internet marketing was those video tours.
That's crazy. So doing that, right?
Like, I'm an OG.
So OG.
Everybody video tours, OG. I want credit for why you were doing those video tours today.
Okay. So then you obviously started making money as an individual agent and eventually said, maybe you didn't. Sometimes it happens by accident, but what was kind of the catalyst of going in and starting to build a team?
Yeah. So as video progressed, I started to get more into Facebook marketing. And one of the biggest lessons that I had learned, two lessons that I'll share with you guys. The first one was getting a coach, right? Hugely instrumental in my progression is finding somebody who was doing or knew how to do more deals than I currently had plateaued at and getting their guidance, right? That is, I don't care what business you're in. I don't care what industry you're in. Go find somebody who knows what you are supposed to do better than you're supposed to do. And so I had a coach that was there guiding me, teaching me, helping me elevate my game. And I remember, you know, the second big lesson that I'm going to share with you guys is the lesson of burn your boats. And that was, you know, me and my wife, we had two kids. We saw these half acre lots over in Lehigh and we looked at it and we're like, man, this would be so awesome if we could move here. And so I called my lender and I said, hey, what would it take for me to get a loan, build a house here? I'm thinking around, you know, don't get mad, everybody. This was back in 2011, 2012, but like $330,000, like with the lot included. That is so funny to say. And he said, and my financials. And he said, you have to show that you have $100,000 in the bank to have enough of a down payment for your house by the time you're done building it. And up until this time, the most I'd ever made in real estate was $70,000, right? And that was like gross. So like not counting my fees and dues and the marketing and stuff like that. And so I sat my wife down and I said, hey, I think we can buy this lot and build a house on here, but I've got to make $150,000. So we've got to double our income. And it's a risk. We could build this house. And by the time it's done, if we don't have that money, we would have to try to sell it off or they would foreclose on us. Like it's not a guaranteed thing. And so are we both willing to sacrifice whatever it's going to take to try to get the money for this house? And my wife said, I am completely on board. Let's go for it. And so I went to town, went to work. And not only that year did we make $150,000, I made $300,000 that year. And it was so cool because not only did we get to build the house, but we got to do the upgrades. We got to finish the basement, got to put in part of the yard, right? And my coach at the time, you know, obviously he was proud of me and we had synergized. And then he said, Justin, like, you're ready for a team. And I was like, what do you mean? And I had sold 45 homes that year. I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? He's like, dude, you are totally ready for a team. He's like, hire an assistant, right? So I hired an assistant.
So you didn't have an assistant?
No, 45 deals by myself. Wasn't even using a TC, right? My nickname in the office was not just the Real Deal Critchfield, but it was the silent assassin, because people would come and talk to me and I'm like, dude, I am not here to talk. Like, I am here to get work done. But they saw me on the leaderboard, right? Yeah. One of the top guys. And so my coach said, okay, now it's time to start building a team. And it was so foreign to me because it was like, are you sure? And he's like, Justin, all you got to do is turn on the leads. You already know how to generate them. Now you just turn on the leads for more people, up the budget, and then help manage them. And so the next year with assistant, I sold like 55 homes and got to work half as hard. And then the next year we sold like 75 homes with two buyer's agents. And I got to work even less harder after that. And it just continued to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow to where the pinnacle was, yeah, I mean, you know, 8 to 10 agents on the team and closing 175 transactions.
So what did you find? What were the challenges of running a team? And, you know, running a team is not for everyone. You know, that you're running a business, you know, profit margins, now you have cost to sell, all of these different things. So, you know, as far as running that team, what did you like that was maybe different from when you were being single? And I'm sure there were lots of times where you're like, nope, not worth it. Like, let me just go back to making my $300,000 by myself.
Yeah, I think for the most part, 90% of building and running the team was fantastic. Like, there was very little drawbacks because I was running it successfully. However, I got to see other people around me trying to run a team who were completely falling on their face. And, you know, I was a coach for several years and I'd coached agents across the country. And that was my goal. Like, I'm going to teach them how to run and build a team successfully, because what you're alluding to is so true. So many people can put up big numbers, but they're not making money. Their profit margins are so slim. And it was the craziest thing, because even as a real estate coach, I would be like warning people left and right, like, don't make this move. Don't make that move. Wait, why aren't you tracking your numbers? Wait, you need to be doing this different. And like, as their coach, they would still make these mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's actually kind of where Team Plus Realty was initially born, was like, I'm going to create the first brokerage that is going to help people successfully run teams. And as a team, we are going to help each other build this properly, because I did run into challenges, right? I did realize there were areas of my business that I was not maximizing. And so although I can quote my team was successful, it was only 40% capable of what it was doing, right? Like, there was another 60% that I knew I was letting money out of the door. Luckily, I was still compensating for that in flips and other things that were happening. But yeah, that's where Team Plus Realty was, is recognizing that it's so hard to build and run a team, even as someone coaching and doing it successfully. Agents and teams would still make mistakes.
Yeah. You're always going to learn. It's a constant learning. And even when it wasn't a mistake 6 months ago or a year ago, it's a mistake today, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
trends
not
change.
Changing, you know, working, not watching. I think for us, as we grew, one of the things, you know, is we started chasing kind of shiny objects for a minute of like, oh, we have this money. We got this figured out. It, you know, it's good. Let's go do this. And then let's go do this. And then as things tightened, you know, I think a lot of us started trying to spend our way out.
Yep.
So as opposed to readjusting budgets and making sure we're still making money, it was like, it's going to outspend it.
Throw more money at it.
You know, that it's only converting at this. Instead of working on skill set, let's just double the lead count, right? And so there's so many different things that you have to watch. And they can sneak up on you if you're not watching it.
Easy.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh, that was a, you know, double-digit loss month. Or, you know, I've seen it people have, you know, triple-digit loss months. And it's like, that's just not sustainable. And it's not fun.
No.
Like, if you're running that big of an organization, losing that much money, I mean, there are definitely days where it's like, okay, let me just go back to closing deals. Because that, you know, once you get good at it, like, it can be easy.
But there's so many factors to it. Yeah. I watch so many.
So, I mean, you've been through ups and downs of the market, right? And, you know, you have your family. Have you figured out, you know, we can call it work-life balance, work-life integration. How do you mix being a dad, you know, a husband, and still having a business?
Oh, that is one that I am actually proud to say that I have done really well throughout the years. Again, you know, being the youngest of 8 kids, I got to see siblings live lives. And then, you know, the tall tale classic sign of like, you know, a spouse working too much. Right.
Yeah.
And missing parts of their kids' childhood or damaging the relationship with their spouse because they're working too much. And so I have been lucky enough to learn those lessons from people ahead of me and, you know, set up my business in a way where I wasn't overworking. And so I think just understanding, I know people hear it time and time again, but like it is so true. Money does not buy happiness, right? It provides convenience. It can make a life easier, but there are so many better things that are so much more rewarding than what the hustle of work can show you. And you do have to find that balance because we all got to make money,
right?
And that's the flip side. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, none of us truly want to work crazy hours, but at the same time, we've got bills to pay. And so being very intentional with your time is so important. Understanding what are the goals that you're truly trying to accomplish. And then, you know, I'm dyslexic. And so I think backwards. So I always kind of like plan with the end in mind. It's always come easy to me. And so if you want to work 40 hours a week and only 40 hours a week, design a world where that's your goal that you're going for. And that's where the team started to make a lot of sense for me was like, oh, I don't want to be showing homes every single evening. I don't want to be showing homes on the weekend. And so let's get a buyer's agent, right? Let's do that. Let's get an assistant. Let's implement these things. And, you know, one of my happiest times was in 2021 when I got to turn over my business completely, right? And it was 100% on autopilot. I was semi-retired and everybody was doing their job because that was what I was going for, right? I saw my dad retire at 40. That was my goal, right?
Yeah.
That was my goal. And to reverse engineer from your goal, and then the universe will figure out a way, and you can figure out a way to make that all happen.
Yeah. So what were, I mean, have there been any, like, I guess, actionable items that you could say, like, if you do this, so you talk about reverse engineering, but like, what are some things that you've said, you know, these are my non-negotiables with my family? Do you have any of those?
Yeah. So time frame is number one. And look, there are going to be weeks or months where you might have to put in 50, 60, 70 hours, but getting the whole family on that game plan, right? So now as I'm kind of building my business back up, one of the things that I'm talking to with the family is like, hey, I want to go to Costa Rica with you guys this spring, but it's going to cost this much money. So here is how we can all work together to try to make that happen. Honey, that might mean that I'm going to be gone a couple more evenings. Kids, that might mean that, you know, there might be a couple weekends that I'm going to have to be working. But can you guys see the bigger goal, right? Can you support that? And creating the support system around it is so key. You and your spouse, your significant other, your kids, you all have to be on the same page. Because energetically, if I come home and I feel that my kids are sad or they're missing me and I'm like just exhausted and I don't have the time, it's going to weigh on my performance at work. Pressure is something that has to be alleviated. You cannot just keep building and stacking. And so, and I think that's where people go wrong is they think that, well, if I'm at work, everybody at home's fine. But then when they get home, it's not fine.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yes. And then they feel that pressure. And taking that now you're taking that pressure back to work and the cycle just kind of continues. So getting everybody, including kids, on the same page to say, hey, it might look different, but here's how I can show up for you during these times. And I recently read a study and I'm probably going to butcher it and I shouldn't even bring it up, but they did a study where they had put mice in water to see how long they could swim. After 15 minutes, the mice would drown. However, they took a second group and they put them in the mice. And just before the 15 minute mark, at like minute 14, they would rescue the mice and pull them out of the water. So they went and repeated this experiment with the mice that they pulled out of the water. And they put them back in the water to see how long they would swim before being rescued. And the mice, on average, lasted 60 hours.
Wow.
The second time.
Because they thought they were going to be rescued.
Because they had hope.
Yeah.
Right? And so when it comes to kids, when it comes to spouses, it's like, hey, honey, there's hope at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Let's all get on the same page. Kids, like, look, dad's going to be back when he needs to be back, but it is going to look different. And you're going to have to swim a little more on your own. But kids are so resilient, right? When they see the bigger picture, when a whole family is on that same page, then great things can happen. And that is exactly the reason why I went from making $70,000 to not just double my income, but we quadrupled it because the wife, me, we were all on the same page, supporting each other, saying, this is what we all want as a family. And if someone's spouse is like, okay, but I don't want you working and I don't, okay, great. Let's create a game plan where it's like, what costs can we cut back in our living style so that maybe I can work 14 hours a week?
Yeah.
And as spouses game plan that together, and you know, there's going to hit that wall where the spouse is probably like, okay, actually, I do want you to work a little bit more so that we can have this lifestyle. Or there might be a world where like, no, I don't want that. But now you're on the same page. Now you have the support structure where everybody's in cohesion so that when I come home late, my wife's like, how'd you freaking do today? Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I put two under contract. And she's like, yes, let's go. Versus when we weren't on the same page, you got home so late. And why didn't you text me? And da 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 da. Completely different energy killing.
Yeah.
Right. That now you have to take on.
Yep. So, I mean, kind of on that, we met, it's probably been, I don't even remember.
Four or five months ago.
4 months.
Something like that.
And so obviously you were just, I mean, you've been plugging along. You're an independent broker, you know, doing transactions. You've done flips. You've been successful. What was it like, I mean, for you, kind of your side of the story? I know why, you know, we connected as far as on a friendship level, I would say even first. But what made you open to looking at Omada, working with us? I mean, kind of what was it, maybe even that day or kind of the months afterwards, to decide like, okay, these are some, you know, this is something that I want to partner with and take a part of?
It goes back to the same lesson when my business exploded. I had a coach who was in a place that was further ahead and where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I had heard of the CERN team and knew you guys very well. My preferred lender was one of your preferred lenders. And I was always asking, like, what are they doing? Give me some tips. Give me some scripts. Give me the things. And I knew that my business had hit a plateau where I needed more education from someone who was farther ahead than where I was at. So, you know, people have got a couple options. You can go hire a coach. And I would say not very good coaches are going to cost you $12,000 to $15,000 a year,
yeah,
minimum.
That's kind of your entry-level coaching.
Yes, entry-level, like 90% of those people are not ahead of where you want to be. They you think they might be, and there's definitely value in them holding you accountable and things like that are there. But the truth is, I was ready to rebuild the team. I was ready to rebuild the transaction count. And I had known and seen the places in my own business running my team the first time that were truly not at the level. And so that was the biggest factor. Go find someone who has done what I'm trying to do and has gone where I'm trying to go. And I knew, even though my brokerage was making more money, I knew even though I'd have to sacrifice some of my stuff, it's like, I would be happy to pay someone of your experience easy $5,000 to $6,000 a month.
Yeah.
Right? In coaching fees. Easy $5,000 to $6,000 a month. And I could have maybe offered you that, right? And said, hey, yeah, let me pay you this. But the problem with that is you still just tell me what to do. And I have to go rebuild the systems and put those systems into place. And that takes literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours to do. So not only would I be paying you 60, 70 grand a year to coach with you, but I'd have to spend hundreds of hours of money to do that. Versus, okay, why don't I just bring the brokerage over, sacrifice a little bit of that money that I was making off of the brokerage, sacrifice some of my money that I now have to pay a split. But number one, it's probably 70% cheaper doing it that way than paying you that. And to me, what's even maybe more valuable is the hundreds of hours that I got back from being able to tap into your systems that you've already built, that are working, that are successful. And between those two things, it was like one of the biggest no-brainers that I've ever had to make in my life. The hardest thing was just my ego. That was the hardest thing.
Yeah, and it really comes down to, so I think when people see, you know, a split or a cost on something, they immediately go that, oh, that's costing me money. Yes, I mean, it's money that's not coming into you, right? But it's the way that I like to help people reframe it is it's a form of leverage. So you can either leverage, you know, us and our company, or you can go, you know, again, like you said, hire the coach, build the systems. It's still going to, at the end of the day, it's going to be an expense. And expenses are twofold. They're either actual write a check, and no one writes checks, so that just dated me. But, you know, it's spend the money or spend the time. they're both an expense.
Yep.
And, you know, I would even argue that time is actually more valuable than the check that you're going to write.
100%.
And so the way that I look at it, like, yeah, there's expense associated with different things, but it's funny. I asked ChatGPT a question, right? And I'll be honest, it was, you know, how do I make Omada a $1 billion real estate company?
Yep.
I do have big goals. And what I thought was interesting, and you actually touched on a couple of them. The first thing it said is that you have to solve a need, right? And so as real estate agents, you know, we solve, we go out and we help people buy and sell. We provide solutions to problems. As a brokerage, you know, we see that we're solving a need with models and systems and things like that. And then the next one is that you have to be willing to take a certain amount of risk. You gave a couple of examples of burning the boats of having some risk. And even if it's not to go out and, you know, build a company and have maybe the level of risk that we've taken on, being a real estate agent, there is a level of risk, because if you're coming from a corporate job that all you have to do is show up and you have to do your job, you just have to show up and that check's coming. So anytime you go into commission-based, you know, independent contractor, business owner, there's a level of risk just because you're not guaranteed the next paycheck, right? But my biggest paradigm shift around the answer that I got was, it actually said, the last one is leverage. And I sat there and I'm like, I can't get there on my own. If I want to create something bigger than just myself, I have to do it with people, and we have to do it through leverage. And so it is one of those that, as we set out to build our company, was to be able to come in for you to plug into our systems and models that we've seen work to run a successful team and provide you leverage to where you can live the lifestyle. And, you know, the goal is that you will be making more money by plugging into our systems than you would, you know, and not to say you wouldn't have got there by yourself, but again, you shorten that time frame.
Oh, so short.
Right. And so it's like, okay, we've been doing these systems and models. I mean, going back to our team, it's a 20-plus-year team.
A lot of experience, huh? A lot of lessons.
And so when, you know, we sit down with people, you know, as far as talking about maybe different splits or things like that on a team level, it's like, well, let me flip it for a second.
Oh, like, such a better way to look at it.
Let me tell you, like, my split. Right. And it's kind of one of those that, you know, hypothetical, let's say we're on a 50-50 split as an agent, you know, you get 50% of the revenue for doing the sales, and we're going to hire the staff. We're going to hire, you know, the transaction coordinators. We're going to pay for the marketing and all of that. And we're going to do that whether you close or not. Right. And so I do look at everyone that comes into our business as a business partner. And I do like to have that conversation of like, you know, let's sit down and think about it. Let's say me and you, it was like, we're going to go off by ourselves and start a company. Just me and you.
Yep.
I only need you to do one thing. I just need you to sell. Like, that's all
that's
I need.
My job.
That's your job. My job is going to be to hire and train staff. I'm going to take care of all the lead generation, all of the marketing of the listings. I'm going to take care of the building, you know, our office space. You know, you're going to take home 50% to your family. And for me, whatever's left after I pay for all these, and whether you're selling or not, like, I promise you, I'm going to take care of them.
Yep.
Whatever's left is what I'll take home to my family. Is that a good partnership? Do you feel that that's an equitable partnership?
Yeah, totally. Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, I've had people say, well, then why do you do it? Right. And my response back is it is a form of leverage, right? Like, but it's a partnership of, this is what I've chosen to do. This is how I want to run a business. You know, and I want to be able to help us, you know, I want you to go further than if you were to go out and hire the staff and have the building and all those things, right? And together, and that's why we named our company Omada, which stands for team in Greek, because we do want to do it together. Like, I actually like working with people more than I like just doing it by myself. It's so much more fun. And so, you know, that's what we wanted to provide. And so it's cool, you know, for you to say, well, I saw the systems and models and things like that, because that's what we put all the effort into, making sure our systems and models work. And so as we grow together with our people, you know, we wanted to create a model that also allowed people to end up owning their own brokerages.
Yeah.
And still being able to leverage, you know, without ever having to write the check of like, I've got to go do this, this, and this. And it's going to take me a year or 3 years before I'm profitable. We just want people to be able to progress naturally as a broker, you know, get to that broker point, have a team, and not have to, I guess, sacrifice 15 years of their family life to be able to do it.
No. And that is the best business, right? The best business is when both businesses, when everybody wins.
Yeah.
Right? That is something that can keep growing and growing and growing and growing. Because whether you're on this part of the leverage or this part of the leverage, people are having success.
Yeah.
They're happy. They're enjoying that. And that's truly, in my opinion, always the best business.
And I would say, though, like, it'll come down to, at the end of the day, too, like, you got to like who you work with. And we did, I mean, a lot of similarities, you know, a lot of common interests. But I think at the end of the day, the biggest one that I saw is that we both want to help people. And so, you know, when you can align, and actually last week we talked about our values, but when you can align on values, then, like, there is a little bit, like, of ego put it aside, but when we can all buy in and say we're doing this together, like, we can still take ownership. We can still have pride in what we're doing, and we're just now part of something bigger, right?
Well, I don't, like, to me, the main things people should look at when they're thinking about any business partnership or brokerage is, like, okay, are they further ahead and where I want to go? Are they good people that, like, truly want my, like, that want to support me and want to see me succeed? Because we do know there are brokerages and teams out there that they will just use and abuse agents all day long and pound them in the ground.
Turn and burn. And
as soon as you're asked for a little bit of help, they're like, nope, get out of here, next person up. And so having someone that really, truly wants you to succeed and that is also willing to give you a business proposition that financially makes sense. And those are the things that I saw you guys all put into line. And I was like, this is crazy. I have never, ever, ever seen anyone be able to offer this much value with these type of low splits, right? That is also ahead and going where I want to go. Nowhere.
Awesome. Okay, so we're coming up on time. Definitely been a pleasure to have you here. As we look at this, I do believe that, you know, you've accomplished a lot of what, you know, other people are going to say, hey, Justin's further ahead of me, right? And, you know, this is what I want to accomplish. If you could narrow it down to one piece of advice for a new agent or maybe someone looking to take the next step, kind of what's been your one thing that you could say, this is, I attribute this to my success, if you can boil it down. Maybe it's one or two.
It's two, but it's nothing new that they haven't already heard. And I'm going to repeat it because it is worth repeating. Number one is find a mentor that has been where you want to go. And this mentor, and you've demonstrated this to me, it has to be willing to truly, like, kind of take you under their wing. There are mentors that claim they will, but then you never get to see them. You never get to talk to them. And that goes back to the integritous person that you are. It's like, dude, I want to help you succeed. If someone is a people person and wants to help you succeed, they will take the time, energy, even if they can't give you a ton of it, to say, I've got a little bit of time here. Let me truly help you do that. And then number two, burn your boats, right? Burn your boats.
Oh,
put that deposit
scary.
On that house. Do what you need to do. Take that risk. Take that jump. There is something magical. There is something powerful. Call it God. Call it universe. But when you go put faith in yourself, I swear, so many amazing things happen, again, through God, through the universe, whatever you want to call it, to basically be like, you are a badass. Like, you are amazing. And the fact that you decided to take this risk and go all in, there is this support that just automatically happens to where I look back and I was like, dude, that is crazy. Like, what was I thinking? But through the whole process, there was not, like, doubt. There was only just like, go, 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 go. And the amount of growth that I then experienced, not just financial growth, but just like the belief in myself, oh, was so rewarding, was so worth it. So that would be my two pieces of advice for everybody.
Awesome. So if someone wants to connect with you, find you, how do they find you?
Yeah, you can Google my number, my name, my number will probably pop up. You've got my social media channels, Real Deal Utah on Instagram, Justin Critchfield on Facebook. People that like to connect with people. We're all what makes the world go round. And there's value in just coordinating with each other. There's value in sharing information with each other. And I know that as I've invested in people, I've gotten back just as much as I've invested.
Awesome. Awesome. And thank you guys for being here with us. If you want to find me, you can reach out Russell Fawcett on different social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, or you can go to omadarealestate.com and reach out that way as well. Thanks again.